The Survivor Specialists, Phil and McKenna, are back, and today we are recapping Australian Survivor Redemption Week number 2, episodes 4 through 6. Again, this is a pre-recorded one. Apologies to those who love being in the live chat, but here we are. This is the way that we could do it. This is the way we could pull it off this time. So here we are. Hopefully they'll start doing Tuesdays, and we can just start doing episodes Tuesday nights, because we have that ready. We're ready to go.
We have the time blocked.
I know.
Whatever schedule thing that they've got going on, they're putting it out on Wednesdays. And, well, we're not going to deal with AU and 50 at the same time.
Not at the same time. So here we are. We are going to dive into Paula's boot, Harry's boot, Johnson's boot, all three of them. Some interesting gameplay here. Losing our first returning player is obviously a big deal. Brooke played her idol, which I know a lot of people are confused about, but she clarified it was only good on the Baron tribe. So as soon as she swapped, it wasn't going to be good anymore. That's why she played it. But yeah, we have a lot to get into. Aisha gets that new advantage, a twist that we hadn't seen before, at least not in this exact iteration. And your girl Lyndall has saved herself by the skin of her teeth numerous times from being a, dare I say, bad Survivor player just by constantly getting by. But she's fun. So
listen, that's all you need to do sometimes.
A lot to get to here. No non-elimination episodes, which I was really happy about. I know sometimes in the second week, Australian Survivor will do a non-elimination episode, and I feel like that's too early, and it makes it so now we're essentially going into week 3 with a normal Survivor season size, 18 players, more easy to digest, and we know the players now. We've gotten to know a lot of them, but to me, this is a pretty brutal boot section. Paula, we didn't really know a lot about, although she went home because of her connection with Harry. But Harry and Johnson going out right here, and I'm not doing this the whole time. I'm not saying Harry and Johnson back-to-back like this. Like, I know this is my childish mentality. Every time I say it, I want to laugh. I'm not doing Johnson and Harry. Losing both of them in the same episode is tough. Or in the same week is tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Harry, I feel like Harry was very stifled this season. Like, he couldn't truly play. He was either forced to, like, sit at camp with his hands underneath his butt and just, like, can't move, or he tried to play that way because of his reputation. And it just felt like he never got off the ground and just, like, was a dead man walking as soon as he got on the beach, because he wasn't the powerhouse that Simon is in challenges.
Yeah. And it also, it really did not help him how bad the Bounty tribe was at immunities. I mean,
they can win reward, no problem.
They could not get it done. So what, they lost 4 of the first 5 immunity challenges, despite the fact that they are the haves of this season. You know, we talk about it as the haves and haves nots, just with a different name. They're the haves. They lose 4 of the first 5 immunity challenges. And then you turn around and, like, how is somebody like Harry supposed to survive all that? The fact that he survived 3 of those immunity tribal councils is pretty impressive. They were trying to do everything they could to keep Harry around and just get rid of his sidekick. I thought going for Paula was actually a bad decision, because now you're giving Harry more momentum in the game. But it felt like Harry really couldn't get anything going. And then, so what does Harry try to do? He does that last ditch effort with the Flint, and Jackson ultimately betrays him, which was actually a great tribal council moment. I really enjoyed that. And Harry just tipping his cap, being like, honestly, man, I would have done the same thing. Great lie. Great attempt. Harry should have just kept it for himself so that Jackson couldn't do this to him. But it sucks that he went. It sucks that he wasn't able to really become the dirty Harry that we're so used to seeing. But, you know, ultimately, he's still an entertaining player. He still did what he could. He still had some interesting ideas. It's just, honestly, like, after last season was dominated by the men, Kaylin, AJ, Miles, the women are dominating the season to start. 100%. And it's really showing in a big, big way.
Yeah, the women over on Bounty are really controlling a lot of everything that's going down. Aisha and Lottie are really standing out as power players in this game, just in general.
Yeah, I mean, Aisha, I was worried about her after episode 1. She was my preseason female winner pick. Her this week was great for her. I mean, getting this twist. So this advantage that she got. Okay, so I wrote down the order. So they won cake. And the cake was divided up largest to smallest. Richard was reading the paper, so Richard had to decide. So he went in order of largest to smallest. Simon, Harry, Lottie, Paula, Laz, Aisha. So sixth, Aisha. I'm going to get that right.
Asha.
I'm going to get it right.
Asha, there you
go. Jackson, Rich, Lindell, and then him, and then Kim, Cameron got nothing. So
right.
Asha was sixth. Random number to be getting the paper. But I kind of like that, where it's like, you're somebody who's not necessarily the biggest. You're not the strongest. You're going to go here. And her advantage was, you get to go. You get to go and you get to pick somebody to not participate in the tribal council from the losing team. And then the winning team you get to pick somebody from the winning team to go to that tribal council and cast the vote. They're not eligible to be voted out, but they get to go cast the vote. So this is something that didn't come to fruition in episode 4, but then in episode number 5, she ultimately takes Laz away and sends Caleb over. So Laz is hanging out with the Baron tribe, and Caleb is going and trying to cause havoc, which I know some people are trying to say Caleb might be the winner of this season. I think Caleb's too chaotic. I don't think that he's going to last long, but either way, so that was her advantage, and she had to do this publicly in front of everybody. It was only good for the next 3 tribal councils. She didn't use it at the first. She used it at the second. But then even in that 3rd tribal council, when she actually did go to tribal council, and it was Johnson who went home 7-4 over Don, I thought that she had a really good episode, and it felt like her and Cameron were actually – her and Cameron were more in control of this tribe, and Lottie was trying to figure out how she could push things a little bit more her way.
Right.
But it feels like it's Asha who is kind of the linchpin and getting a lot more screen time than Cameron. So I'm feeling good about her spot after this episode. Nobody really gave her a hard time for sending Caleb, for taking Laz. Nobody seems bothered by that. She seems to be really managing her threat level very well right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was interesting that she chose Laz. I can see why. So it can paint a target on Laz, because now she has relationships with all of Baron that Bounty does not have. So that's an easy target. She was also on the bottom. But now you have put only Lindell on the bottom, and you don't, a lot of times you don't want to do a straightforward, let's everyone dump on this one person because of an idol that Lindell actually does have that they don't know about. And so taking away one of those bottom, like, split votes, what do you do? And now Lindell wins an unexpected immunity. So now they're really like, oh crap. But now it does turn into the Harry vote. But if Lindell wasn't immune, do we have a Lindell vote out here?
I don't think so. I don't. I think that Lindell was a red herring to make it seem like Harry versus Lindell mattered more. I mean, look, the one thing that Australian Survivor does, people will say, oh, it's so much more dramatic with the tribals. You don't know who's going home. I always say they create drama by omission. They really do. They leave out important plot points so that it feels more dramatic than it is. And they'll purposely make you feel like, oh, it could be any of these 4 people going into tribal council. But then in reality, it's like one of the most obvious boots. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe there would have been a little bit more of a push on Lindell, but Harry's time was just coming up. And I think that Lindell was too easy of a target. I don't think they were going to go for Lindell. Now, maybe they were, and we'll never know. Or, you know, maybe an exit press will start to find out. Mm-hmm. But to me, it felt like Lindell versus Harry, whoever wins this is going to go home. Whoever loses, or whoever wins is going to save themselves. Whoever loses this is going to go home. And it felt like that's just the story they wanted to tell. And the editors for Australian Survivor will tell those stories, even if they're not actually the story that's happening on the island. I feel like they take greater liberties than US does. So I don't think Lindell was going home. I mean, just to go in order of what happened here for Lindell's game, Lindell told Jackson Eliza was her idea right to start off episode number 4. Right. So Lindell is already potentially making a massive blunder by doing that. They go to tribal council. Paula tells Lindell to vote for Jackson. And everybody's talking about, oh, should we get rid of Lindell or Paula? What should we do? They all go Paula, because Paula is more threatening. Lindell's not threatening. So if that was their mentality to go 7-1 and pile it on Paula, why would they not just, you know, the next vote is what, 7-4 or something like that on Harry? Like, Why were they not thinking that anyway? It was 7-1-1 on Harry. To me, it feels like they were always probably going to be thinking Harry, 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 because they had just drawn a line in the sand with Paula. And I know that Lottie's having the conversations and saying, no, we don't want to do this. I understand that that's all there. But if you follow our US coverage, I always talk about what are the editors telling you and what's really happening. Like, I really look at the edit. Australian Survivor, they have 3 hours and 30 minutes every week of content. They have more time to show you conversations that ultimately were going to lead nowhere. Like, US Survivor has these exact same conversations of, who do we just see? We saw Jenna Lewis go home. There are the exact same conversations going on of, no, I like Jenna. Let's not get rid of Jenna. Let's not do that. That's all happening, but that doesn't fit the story as well. So they're leaving off the meatier, juicier parts of that. The here, they're telling the story because they have more time to tell the story of, why was this person doing this? Are they in trouble? Now here's the story of how the vote gets off of them. I feel like Harry was probably always going to be the boot after Paula. You're assuming that a tribe swap is coming. Harry keeps saying that he's always not had the numbers, but he's always found a way through, which is a great pitch if you feel like, I want Harry on my side. But it's a terrible pitch if you're like, well, I don't want Harry to be the one who keeps surviving. You don't want right. Harry to get with Brooke. You don't want Harry to, all of a sudden there's a tribe swap and now you have Brooke, Harry, Simon, and Mark all in the same tribe and you're on that tribe. That's a disaster. So I feel like Harry was doomed, and he's a more dangerous player than Simon. They all like Simon. Simon's easy to play with.
He is. And we see now also his relationship with Lottie get stronger as well. Lottie goes to him and is just like, all right, we haven't really been like super eye to eye, but I think this could be something good. Cause I know Harry just went home. So like, let's lock something in. Mm-hmm. And this is crazy because Lottie was the one who's like, all returnees need to go, but maybe it's all returnees except for Simon.
Yeah. I mean, cause that's the thing. Simon's just not a threat and he's good at challenges. So why are you getting rid of Simon at this point? It just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. All right. So I want to go through the rest of episode 4 here. This is where Don calls himself Don Rogers Redemption and then goes, I meant Roberts. I said my wrong last name. Eventually we end up seeing him reveal that he is Matt Rogers' brother. He tells Mark in this episode, ends up telling the entire tribe later down the line. But we'll get into that a little bit more. We get a lot of Jackson backstory in episode 4. We don't hear a lot from him in episode 6, but in episode 4, episode 5, Jackson gets a good story. He needs to figure out what to do without Eliza. Lottie says Paula controlled the vote, which, like, we had no idea who Paula even was. And then Lottie talking to Simon about booting Paula, which ultimately ends up being the challenge in this episode of the tug of war and then throwing the beanbags was so cool. And again, you can't do this with three tribes. This is a really fun challenge that I would love to see instituted into US Survivor.
Yeah. And having them need to pull with two people on the structure, how much does their weight matter? Well, I mean, every time they jumped, they were able to pull. So clearly, like, the person's weight matters a little bit here. And do you put a light person who might not be able to throw, or do you put a heavier person who can for sure throw? Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, the balance that they were trying to do. And man, Cameron whiffed it.
How many sandbags? I think it's 30 to 50, somewhere in there. And he missed, he wasn't even close. Like, I know he's an MMA fighter and I know that he's on redemption because he's not a good MMA fighter. He's not a good thrower either.
That was like, I feel like War Dog could have done better.
I mean, he wasn't even close. And I understand that, like, that's a little bit tougher of a challenge because then when you go to throw, they're pulling, whatever. But, like, you got to know what your throwing ability is. Like, if I was going out there, like, I have a messed up shoulder. I talk about this all the time on this podcast. Like, I've dislocated this shoulder. I've dislocated both my shoulders a lot, but this one always pops out. Always. So, like, I used to be able to throw a football pretty far. I used to be able to throw a baseball pretty far. I can't throw shit anymore. Like, my arm, I can't get momentum behind me.
Where would you be, though, if it was tug of war versus throwing something?
I mean, I'd still go for throwing because I feel like it's not that tough of a throw. Like, eventually I would get it. If I had 30 tries, I want to say that I'd be able to get it. Like, I can throw a beanbag. I can play cornhole pretty well. Like, I know it's a little bit further. I mean, you said that as if I couldn't be the tug of war guy. I don't understand what you're getting.
You said I've hurt shoulder. Ow, I can't throw.
Yeah, so yeah. So are you saying, though, that I'm not one of the beef guys that would be participating in the tug of war section? You couldn't see me, Don, and Simon teamed up there?
I could. I was just wondering where you would go if you have an owie shoulder.
Look, I'm trying to downplay myself. So when I get asked to play Australian Survivor, since US never call me, they'll just be like, oh, that guy can't throw shit. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, you know, Roger Clemens.
The cannons on Phil.
Yeah. So that was a fun challenge. I really enjoyed that. Immunity is won by Baron. This is where the whole vote thing is going on. The other thing that comes up in this episode, though, that I think was really important was the corn chip cartel. Mark, Don, and Caleb. And they do end up voting together at the Johnson boot. Mm-hmm. What's your take on the corn chip cartel?
After watching these three episodes, Don just felt like so Jimmy T.
That's what I wrote. Oh, my God. I didn't even text you that. My note right here says Don is Jimmy T. And I actually have an arrow pointing to it because it was that important for me to make sure I said that.
Yeah. I watched that. I was just like, you know, I would have done so much better at X, Y, Z. I would have done better at this, that, and the other thing. Put me in coach. And it's like, Don, come on now.
I do carabiners every day. I told you I should have been doing this. It's like, shut up. You're not, there's no way you're good at everything. Like, I understand wanting to participate in this stuff, but give it a rest, man.
I should have been the slingshot. Well, he's also proven to be a powerhouse blocker too. So that's why they put him as like getting the ball. And he was good at that. And Mark didn't do bad.
I know. Oh, Mark missed a couple shots that I absolutely would have hit. Okay, Don. And then he's yelling, you guys should have let me do this. And he's complaining about it nonstop. And he's having such a fit that Ben can't unclip the carabiner.
Yeah.
And then I like that Mark turns around. I was like, okay, we're a team though. Like, this is teamwork now. Let's stop. Like, shut up. Nobody cares about your pity party. Like, stop. How is this Matt Rogers' brother?
I don't know. And like, oh, I should have bounced the ball off the ramp. I told you I would have been good at that one too. Like, there were so many challenges in this episode, and we had at least 5 out of the 6. Don was just like, yeah, I would have done better than whomever.
Yeah. I mean, he felt like coach and token jeans. You know, none of us have ever done this. I have. You know, that's what it felt like. It just, I mean, Don, look, I'm enjoying Don. Okay. When it was like between Johnson and Don, get Johnson out of here. I'm more in on Don. I think Don is great entertainment. Honestly, look, he's an older guy who's confident in himself. That is kind of that Jimmy T thing. He has a different way of talking to people. He's not going to win, but I do understand also where he's coming from. He just has no idea how to deliver it. And I think that's the craziest part for him. And that's the hardest part for him. Now, what do you think about the fact that right at the start of episode 5, he's telling everyone that he is related to Matt Rogers? Do you think that that's going to help or hurt his game? Or do you think everybody's asking the same question I just asked? How the hell is this Matt Rogers' brother?
See, like, we have Caleb being like, I still don't know his brother. And then we...
Caleb's full of shit.
And then I feel like because he is playing so poorly, I don't think it matters. Mm-hmm. If he was a little bit more squirrely and trying to, like, play the game harder, we could wind up with a Brandon Hance situation of, like, I'm trying to conceal my family's identity. But, like, I ultimately don't think that it's going to matter because he's not doing a great job.
No, not at all. I mean, he can't win if he gets to the end at this point, unless he has some great, hey, look, redemption arc. Whoa. Maybe that's what they're setting up. I mean, maybe they are. Maybe the person who's going to win this season is somebody who's getting dragged through the mud early because Lindell. They want it to be redemption. Yeah. Lindell. I mean, Lindell's had a lot of confessionals and stuff. Truly. Maybe it's Lindell. Maybe it is Don. Who knows? I mean, I'm not counting on Don. That's for sure.
But I'm not counting on Lindell.
Yeah, it could happen, though. It really could. So, all right. So in this other episode, we have Caleb telling Mark that Johnson is going for him, and Mark confronts Johnson very aggressively. This is all setting up. Obviously, this tribe doesn't go to tribal till episode 6. We hadn't seen them go to tribal since episode 2 or whatever it is. Yeah, episode 2. Mm-hmm. So there's a big gap here, but they're really telling the story of Mark. And I know that I was really concerned about Mark from the preseason, from the way that they kind of edited his videos. I thought that was a little weird. They kind of wanted to make him look silly, and now he's still in the game. What do you think about the way that Mark approached Johnson and really the way that Mark is handling this tribe as a whole?
It seems like I feel like Mark is kind of my ideal ally because he is just like his ego and thinks he has control of this entire tribe. Faith, Keely, they see right through it and are able to, you know, make that have they have this plan to undermine Mark. But, you know, Brooke goes wild a little bit here. Some of the things just don't catch on to get rid of Caleb. I also don't think Caleb is fully in Mark's pocket either, but I think Mark has a decent enough control on the tribe to be the figurehead while other people are running other plans behind the scenes. I worry for Mark's perception of his allies because they are talking. He knew something was off, but didn't know what.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, I mean, in episode 6, it really comes to fruition a little bit more. This Sally, Faith, Keely getting together, looking to boot Caleb, looking to bring in Ben. Like, that's where I started to get concerned for Mark. Episode 5, I felt like they were showing it from his point of view. Obviously, Johnson then ends up going in episode 6. So it's good foreshadowing here of him aggressively approaching Johnson and going with that.
Right.
Mark is doing a better job, and now that he's hitting a swap, we'll see what happens. I still feel like he doesn't really have a super tight number one. I know he's got the corn chip cartel. I know he had Faith and Keely, and he's been talking to them and all of that. But it feels
Don
like
Don is his closest.
Don might be his closest. It feels like he's expendable. The other one who's close to them, who we've barely heard from, is Tez. And Tez is the one who kind of told him what was going on, that something was awry, that he was hearing a different name than Johnson going into that vote. But then Tez also wouldn't tell him exactly who it was. So Tez is playing it close to the chest. Tez also says to Mark that he wouldn't mind seeing Don go home. So how close is Tez really with Mark? I am a little concerned for Mark for sure. Going into a swap, even though he had
definitely
a
the good, next.
He had a good
vulnerable
game.
Vulnerable returnee, yeah.
Yeah. Because that's where, you know, I was talking about, and I want to keep recapping it, and then we can get more into it, but like we were talking about the women really dominating, like that Sally, Faith, Keely alliance, and then you have Lottie on the other side. It feels like they're the ones dominating the game, and it just feels like they're the ones that I know, and what they're saying is going. Like you have somebody like Rich, who in episode 5 is the vote that Harry and Simon try to flip it to. Or not Harry and Simon, Harry and Jackson. Yeah, they try to flip it to Rich. And we don't even hear from Rich. Rich is just kind of doing his thing. And I know a lot of people thought Rich would be a ha-ha dick, but he really hasn't been. He hasn't been at all. Look at the puns that we have going on here. Like the way that the
Harry Johnson.
I'm telling you. And then we got Richard being called a dick. Whoa, who would have thought? But he really hasn't been. He's actually been pretty calm, cool, and collected. And Harry's pitch was, he's controlling the tribe. I'm like, what are you, because he divvied out who got cake when? Like, what do you mean he's controlling
the tribe? It's just like dad vibes. It's like, Richard's just fine.
Yeah, which I'm surprised at, being the CEO and everything like that. I am a little surprised, but hey, he's playing okay. So, but it's who am I hearing from? And I'm just hearing from the women right now. I mean, the men who were making big scenes, Johnson and Harry, because I said it backwards, they're both out. And then Mark, yeah, he's having a good one. But if you look at the other men, I really like Ben, but Ben's good. He's athletic. He feels like he's going to be a pawn. He doesn't feel like he can win. Caleb is all over the place. He finally goes to tribal. He's coming back from voting out Harry, yelling at everybody that he's a huge threat. And they finally got rid of a huge threat, and we're getting rid of returning players. That's not necessarily a good look. Don is getting dragged through the edit in the mud, Jackson, I know pretty well. Mark is you know, obviously getting something. Richard, I barely know. Tez, I barely know. And then you have Simon. And I mean, Simon, we all know because he's played so many times, but I still think Simon's a long shot to win. So I don't have a lot of faith in the men here, really, with the exception of Jackson.
Yeah, and even Jackson still right now is like, hasn't fully recovered. We'll see what he can do at the tribe swap and see where he ingratiates himself. I think he is still on the bottom and would be either the split vote or, you know, something. I don't think he's fully safe yet. And we know a lot of the women, and then there's like Blanche.
Yeah,
non-existent.
Laz is non-existent.
In six episodes. Laz is, I at least know who Laz is. Blanche,
only
I don't
think because she got chosen.
That and like Lyndall had the idol situation with her. Like she's had like a few little moments of just like, hey, Laz, what's up? Yeah. But yeah. Blanche, out of here.
Yeah.
She's non-existent.
Yeah, but then when you look at the other women in the game.
Exactly.
Asha, Brooke,
mm-hmm.
Faith, Keely, Lottie, Lyndall, Sally, not so much, although she had a better episode here. Like,
yep.
To me, the winner's coming from there.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to probably see one of those women win.
Yeah, it'll just be a matter of now when the swap hits, what ends up happening? Because remember this time last year, we had the Witches Coven or whatever they call themselves, who looked like they were in control, and then they got decimated once the post-merge hit. So
right.
Who knows how that's going to end up shaking out. But I do feel like, you know, they're coming to play. And you know, it's hard for me this early on when you're talking like, okay, we have 24 people. I don't really mm-hmm. know them. This green tribe has barely gone to tribal of like, where do people stand? But right now, I'd probably say the winner is going to be Lottie. That's where I think I'm looking. I thought Lottie at that tribal council where Harry went home, once it was revealed that Harry was going to go home, she leans over to Caleb and says, can you vote for Jackson just in case he has an idol? She's the only one who's saying that stuff. She's the one who's coming up with that. And I feel like Lottie is the one who wanted Harry to stay, knew she wasn't going to get her way. And so she finally gave in a little bit and said, fine, guys, mm-hmm. we can go a different route. Now, obviously, she wanted Lyndall and Lyndall was immune. So whatever. But I do feel like Lottie is showing the give and take necessary for Survivor and showing that she's willing to be thinking ahead a little bit more than everybody else. So I'm really, really captivated by how she's going to get going in the post-swap game, because it feels like everybody who would be really close with Lottie, like Asha's being shown questioning Lottie. Mm-hmm. Lottie, you know, we don't really know who her closest ally is, but I feel like her story is just the one that makes the most sense right now.
And I think she's even still pretty safe. I don't think she would get like a stray bullet because she's willing to work with a lot of different people. And I think she's willing to just suck it up and be like, okay, I didn't want Harry to go, but Asha, what's the name? You know, I feel like she's able to adapt in the game very well.
Agreed. Agreed. So we'll see what ends up going on there. Over on the Green Tribe, let's talk about this. They don't have a name, so how dare we? But let's talk about this Sally, Faith, Keely alliance, because it felt like Mark and Faith, if I'm not mistaken, from week one, seemed like they were pretty close. Seemed like that was going to be an alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't. And so we have them go to Tribal to vote out Kat. Three episodes go by. Then they go back to Tribal. Yes, here's the people who vote together. Brooke, Caleb, Don, Faith, Keely, Mark, Sally all vote for Johnson. Tez, Johnson, Blanche, and Ben all vote for Don. But Sally, Faith, and Keely were the ones that we were being told were the decision makers in this mm-hmm. vote.
Yeah, because they had the alternate plan. So if they decided to rally the numbers for the alternate plan and like really push hardcore or more hardcore than they were, then they could have probably flipped some numbers to get a plurality vote going. But because they decided to ultimately go with the Don Johnson plan, then that's what happened. So I think they definitely were the kingpins within this vote for sure.
Yeah. And so what do you think about this Caleb moment? Do you think that this was coming because Caleb had come back and was super excited and now they're worried about him? Like, why do you think they were so gung-ho now on, we got to get rid of Caleb. Let's make him the vote. That'll be better for all of our games.
Because all of a sudden he was like pinpointed as one of Mark's minions. And yeah. I never felt that way aside from like Caleb going and joining that conversation on the beach to be part of the corn chip alliance. And it's like
corn chip cartel.
Sorry. If they're really trying to take out one of Mark's numbers, it's Don. Vote Don over Johnson. And then Johnson is indebted to you and can go against Mark because he doesn't want Mark in the game.
Well, and that's ultimately what ended up happening is they do vote for Don. Don is the backup vote here if it's not going to be Johnson. You know, Johnson is who they wanted voted out. I think that Johnson was sketching people out a lot more than the edit let on. I think that he was way more on the outs. I think him being a Big Brother player, I think he was just coming across as insincere to people. And that's why they ultimately wanted to get him out of the game over Don. Don is predictable. You know what you're getting from Don.
Right.
But Don was the backup plan. So that if Johnson played an idol, it would have been Don going home instead of Caleb.
See, you let Johnson play an idol and just keep Don going and keep Don going home. Because I think Don, while Johnson can have legs in the game, but who is worse to have legs in the game, Mark or Johnson? I don't know. They seem both equally strategic, but because Mark is a returning player, I would err more on Mark. So that's why I would vote out Don.
All right. Well, so Mark finished third place on his season. Okay. Let's look at Mark's voting just to put that into a perspective. Cause I feel like that'll help. Like, what was Mark really doing? Okay. Let's look at Mark. Votes correctly at the first two tribals, votes correctly every time on the original tribes. Okay. Great.
Okay.
They get the switch tribes. He votes for Rihanna. Alex goes because of the rock draw, but I don't think he's actually eliminated from the game. Yeah, they would be swapped to the other tribe. So that doesn't matter. So we're not worried about that one. But in the other votes, he votes correctly up to that point. Okay, now we get into the post-merge. Mark votes for Caroline. Winna goes home. Mark votes for Raymond. Eden goes home. He gets Aileen right. He gets Jaden right. He votes for Raymond at that vote where Raymond got everybody to vote for him and Valeria went home. He votes for Kirby. Alex goes home. Votes for Rihanna. That happened. Kitty, it happened. Kirby, it happened. So he starts to get in on it later in the game. But that's where it becomes scary with Mark. It's like Mark is just kind of a normal dude. And I think that's what the four people that they put on this season as returning players, even Harry, who's now gone, I think they did a really good job of casting pretty normal, not larger than life people. Like Survivor had a problem with that, right? When they would do these captain type seasons, Boston Rob and Russell are too big. Ozzy and Coach are too big, right? And then Philippines, they cast Scoopin, Penner, Russell Swan. That's the best version of this style. Why? Because they weren't that big. And I think, like, yes, Simon's a huge character. People love him, but he's not this kind of like massive player. And then Mark and Harry and Brooke, who everybody knows are dangerous, they're just normal people that people really like. Like Coach is a character. Russell is a character. Even Boston Rob is a character. And so I think they did a good job here with this casting because I think Mark is kind of allowing people to get comfortable. I think they're getting comfortable around him when they shouldn't be.
Well, that was his whole MO with Tez. Like, oh, people are starting to let their guards down around me and tell me things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, man, I'm curious how he goes with the swap. And I know that like when the swap starts happening, we don't know exactly what's going to shake out. I didn't look at the swap tribes. I don't know if it's out there. I mean, I watched the episode and we're recording this like 5 minutes after. So who knows? But I do feel like, you know, if you let Mark, because that's what happened to him is he was right, swapped, didn't lose, and then got to the post merge. And that's when he was wrong. And then he started to figure out how to get further in the game. You can't let Mark get his footing under him because if you have Mark strategically with his footing under him and then you have Simon and Brooke both with their physical challenge prowess, you're now setting yourselves up for failure. This is a very good cast of newbies. Look at that dust.
Look at how good that camera is to pick up that dust.
Right? Isn't that? It's a crazy world we're living in these days. Like, I feel like this is a good group of newbies. I know, like, we were talking about with the traders, it was a terrible group of faithfuls, but a really good group of traders, or at least Rob was playing a great game of traders, but the faithfuls were clueless. This group of newbies seems like they know what they're doing, but you still like getting rid of Harry. It felt like they could have gotten rid of Harry one episode earlier. So if you were already willing to get rid of Harry, why did you not get rid of him one episode earlier? And the Mark thing, it's like, I get why you'd want to get rid of Johnson. He plays Big Brother. He never got voted out, whatever. Kat also played the traders, but you voted out the two people who played different versions of games instead of voting out the people who played Survivor. I think that's weird.
I agree. And if you're wanting to go for Mark's closest ally, why not go for Mark? Like, if you want to get rid of a Mark number, why not just go for Mark?
And it feels like they're almost trying to lull Mark. Something was up with Johnson where they were more worried about him. And maybe they feel comfortable with Mark because they know how Mark has played the game. So they're not as worried about it, but I don't know.
And like, Mark is on their side. So let's not try and rally something against Mark so he gets ticked off or something like that.
Yeah, it's true. So during this week, changing the subject, during this week, it was a pretty standard week, which Australian Survivor doesn't tend to do. Obviously, you had the advantage that Asha found, so that was a little bit different. But for the most part, it was, you know, we had the one tribe lose, and then they have a chance to get immunity to save themselves. Okay, that's a little bit unique, sure. That's also at the tribal council that Asha plays the advantage, so whatever. But otherwise, it was a very standard, like, reward challenge, immunity challenge, tribal council, no crazy twists, no non-elimination episodes, no swap, no anything. Do you think that this was purposeful coming off of AU versus the world? Because I feel like the first six episodes of this were so basic so far. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. Yeah.
It might also be because of the host change. Like, let's not throw the kitchen sink in there because people are either might be skeptical about JLP not being there. So we're just going to ease them in to AU. And then, you know, all right, here's every twist known to man. I was still like, I'm always still expecting when someone gets voted out for them not to be voted out. So I was like, oh, Harry's voted out. Mm-hmm. Is he though?
Yeah, how are they gonna save him? We'll wait until Redemption Island shows up. That's why it's called Redemption. We just dropped the island. But I feel like it's
Redemption Rock.
I feel like it's been solid though. Like, I've enjoyed it, and I wonder if there was a thought there of, hey, we know AU versus the World hasn't necessarily aired yet while this was filming or whatever, but we know what we're doing with AU versus the World. We know that that might bring in more U.S. Survivor fans. U.S. Survivor fans are used to elimination every time. They're used to these very standard structures. Maybe that has something to do with the way that the first couple episodes of the season were done, because now you're 2 weeks in, you're going to get a tribe swap. It's going to be a non-elimination episode. The U.S. people are already in. Like, the new viewers that you have are already saying, well, great, I'm hooked. I'm watching the rest of the season, because you gave them something normal throughout. Right. And even the twist, the advantage that Asha had.
It's not that bad. It's almost like a safety without power situation. You know, it's
kind of, yeah. I mean, and
then she was a power with a sit-in on tribal. Like, U.S. has done close-ish
things. And it's happening so early that what difference is Caleb's vote ever going to make? Like, most of the time, that vote's not going to matter because the tribe's going to try to come up with something almost unanimous, especially with a visitor there. And then even pulling down the thing and being like, here's your immunity challenge for individual immunity. We don't see that on U.S. Survivor. But that's not confusing to U.S. Survivor viewers. Mm-hmm. It's very standard.
Yeah, because typically if like both tribes are going to tribal council, one tribe will win individual. So we've seen individual immunity in the tribal phase.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then the other thing that stood out to me is, like, you think about the rewards that they've gone on. You had the reward with the coffee and the snacks. You had the reward with one tribe's going to get the camp, one's not. You had the reward of the store, which ultimately didn't pan out into anything really dramatic. You have the reward with the cake where it's divvied up and that gets somebody an advantage. Okay, fine, whatever. But for the most part, the rewards have even been standard, because the rewards tend to be where Australian Survivor really does throw the kitchen sink at everybody.
Yeah.
Let's see how much we can get going here. And that hasn't been the case. And I'm not saying it's not a knock. I think it's a positive. I think Australian Survivor gets a little too wild. I think the season's going to get more wild. But I just feel like it is kind of jarring after Titans versus Rebels, after Brains versus Brawn 2, and then you go to AU versus the World. I feel like this is being heavily influenced by AU versus the World, not necessarily because AU versus the World was good, just because they knew that it was going to bring in a new audience and you need the audience to understand Survivor. I also think that's probably why they felt like they could get away with doing David, because there's a lot of new people who started watching Australian Survivor probably with AU versus the World. They don't know JLP yet. They watch him one season, they see David, then go back. They don't care that JLP is the host. And I will say, at this point, I'm all in on David as the host. I don't care. I think he's fine. I think he's actually doing quite well.
Yeah. And also, if they've watched Dondi too, David was on Dondi. So
you're like, really bringing in a U.S. audience now.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're almost lulled into a false sense of security here with AU Survivor, because I'm expecting it to like not be Survivor, just be a little like Survivor with a little twist. And by a little twist, I mean every twist that you could think of. But it's nice that they're almost doing a reset. Like you have the two seasons that nobody talks about that aren't really part of the main AU chunk. Then you have like the JLP era, and now you have the David era, which is almost starting, you know, at one again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing is like you have the Lindell and Brooke trying to switch the idols and stuff. We've seen that on US. Like not necessarily we haven't seen that on US, but we've seen people, we just watched it in the Survivor 50 premiere too, of Genevieve has to get the idol to somebody. Now she doesn't have to trade it at
a
challenge, but we're used to people having to do it across
the line. It wasn't mandatory, but JT did it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, okay, this is something that the audiences will understand pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go from there. So yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed this season. I mean, it doesn't have the absolute chaos going on that Brains vs. Braun 2 had going, but I feel like I've gotten to know these players really well, and I understand the motivations of most of them.
And especially when you don't have to show certain people because they got an advantage every episode. You know, you don't have to show Asha every episode because she has found an advantage in everyone. You could be highlight her in one episode, highlight someone else in another episode. So it's nice that the edit is spread out a bit more, that it's not focused on AJ, who's finding a bunch of things, or they have the freedom to do someone else's backstory because they don't need to fill the time with someone who's dominating.
And through episode one is KCD, is that Kyle?
Yeah.
Okay, so Kyle Durrett, who does Amazing Race with McKenna and has jumped on a couple podcasts during Celebrating Survivor, he did the confessional count for Australian Survivor. So through week one, Richard and Ted had zero? I thought Richard had one.
Is it through week one?
So this is through week one.
Okay. But
just to put this, Harry had 12, Lindell had 10, Mark had 9, Lottie had 7. Brooke and Johnson both had 6. Cameron and Jackson both had 5. Ben had 3. Don had 3. Keely had 3. Blanche had 2. Caleb had 2. Faith had 2. Asha had 2. Simon had 2. Laz had 1. Paula had 1. Sally had 1. Richard and Tez nothing. Liza 3. Kat 4. Daniel 3. And it kind of goes to what you're talking about. Like, there's some people who are being overshadowed, but now after week 2, Simon's definitely had more confessionals. Asha's definitely had more. Faith's had more.
Tez has had one at least.
Tez has had a couple. Yeah, I still don't know if Richard has. But, you know, Sally had a couple in this last episode. Keely's getting more. Don is getting a lot more. Ben really hasn't. But
we're getting camp life confessionals. But we're getting camp life talks and intimate moments with them. So it feels like I've talked to Richard, but he's really just talking to other people.
Yeah, it's been solid so far. So I think that goes to your point of like, you know, you feel like you're getting to know what's happening because of the way the show is being structured. I feel like the edit's a little bit different too. I really do. And maybe this is just because of the way the season shakes out. Maybe the returning players don't go as far. Maybe they're trying to build up the story for the people who take out the returning players. Who knows? But to me, it does feel like they've changed up their game a little bit here. And that's from somebody who's watched every season once. I haven't watched a single episode more than once, but you know, I feel like it feels different to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
it does. No, it does. And it's like, I feel like now that you have brought it up, it does feel different, but I'm so used to watching US Survivor that it feels similar because it is of the pace of US Survivor with no crazy, crazy advantages. Yeah. And I haven't watched AU since AU versus the World, and that was just once. So
yeah. So before we wrap this one up, and then we'll be back in week 3 again, we're doing once per week. Last week you all got lucky, we got 3 episodes because we thought it was only 2 episodes, and then we ended up doing 3 recaps. We're only going to be doing one per week. Maybe until we get to finale week, we'll figure something out. But with all the U.S. Survivor stuff we have going on, it's just too much. It's just too much. Make sure you've liked this video and all of that. I probably should have said at the beginning since it's pre-recorded and I can't have the chat helping me out here. But before we go, who's your next boot? Who's your next three boots or next two boots? I'm assuming there's going to be a non-elimination episode in here. So who's your next two boots so that we can see how right you are? And then who is your winner pick at this point?
There is a reason I don't do predictions and power rankings. I am not playing that game. I never want to volunteer to come on that podcast, but you're doing it to me anyway. I think Laws probably has a high chance of going. And I think I don't want to say Lindell, and I don't think it could be Don if he's swapped away, but he's pretty good in challenges, but I'm going to go Don.
Okay. And then who you got winning?
Winning. I'm going to jump on the Asha train.
Okay. So you're on that train with me. Okay. So Asha will forever be my preseason female winner pick, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to stick with her here. I'm actually going to go with, I already said it, but I'm going to go with Lottie as the winner.
I'm here. Still rooting hardcore for Lindell. And if she pulls it out,
that would be
some freaking miracle. Yeah.
That would be amazing. I'm going to go Blanche as a boot coming up.
Oh, I forgot about Blanche.
Yeah. Well, too bad. You can't change. You can't change.
I'm not. See, I forgot about Blanche.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Blanche and I'm going to go with, I'm going to go with Richard because Richard's name has come up. Richard was somebody that, you know, yeah, we wanted Jackson to go, but Richard feels like somebody people could get behind. So Blanche and Richard are going to be my next two. Also, we haven't really heard from Richard at all. And I'm going to go with Lottie as my winner because I do feel like Lottie is still in the best shape. Now, granted, we have a tribe swap coming. Who knows what that's going to mean? But this is just based on the edit, what I've watched and everything so far. I'll definitely be rooting for Asha. I had Ben as my male winner pick. He's not winning, but he is entertaining. He's good at the challenges. And I like that they're like, he's like the goofy older brother. Like, he's just good at stuff and he's just there.
Ben is a weapon in this challenge.
That's it. That's it. I know. David is really hitting that level of JLP. That's for sure. So, but anyway, anything else? Or are we wrapping this up?
No, I think that's good.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for continuing to stick with our Australian Survivor coverage. We'll continue to put out one episode a week moving forward. Let us know what you thought in the comments of this episode of the season so far overall. And make sure you like and subscribe. And, you know all the U.S. stuff we have going on. So become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. I think I'm going to start doing power rankings on Fridays during the season for Australian Survivor. I think that's what I'm going to do. I think that's my Australian Survivor show.
For your Patreon?
Yeah, is going to be a power ranking. So I'm going to do that. Probably starting on the 13th, though. Just because we have two episodes coming out this Friday, but then after that, we won't. I don't want to do three on that day. So I think I'll probably start on the 13th. So anyway, I'll start doing power rankings after week three. So thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Cachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to cachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com code FITNESS.